This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Kyle Connor forced to play the puck in toward the corner. Now for Ehlers. He walks out with a shot. Goal! Scores! Nikolai Ehlers with his team leading ninth. It's a power play goal. Scheifele will lift the stick of Hamhuis with his stick and come away with a puck. Lots of the count in front for Ehlers. A shot. He scores! Nikolai Ehlers with his team leading 10th. For Roslovic, darts in toward the high slot, dropped it for Beaulieu, a slap shot, blocked in front, rebound out in front, a shot, they score! Lucas Pisa ties it at 3! How you doing?
Our buddy Paul Edmonds with the call from the Jets road trip. Victories last Thursday in Florida, victories last Saturday in Tampa Bay, a victory on Tuesday in Nashville, and then a defeat on Thursday in Dallas despite a stirring three-goal comeback.
I realize the Jets didn't win that last game against Dallas, but I just love that it was Lucas Abiza that tied the game up.
Well, you might as well just pick like the most random player. I mean, I guess who would... I mean, Logan Shaw may have been more random a little bit, but...
Lucas Abiza was the most random you could possibly be there.
It's pretty random.
He hadn't scored the previous season, although he only played 9 games.
Yeah.
And the season before that, I think his last goal came February of 2018, and it was against the Flames. And then he only scored one other goal that year when he was with Vegas. It was November 10th of 2017 against which team?
The Jets.
Yeah.
Well,
and that would say what are the odds? You know.
What about that mustache?
Mustache is solid. It's good November.
That's a good one.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, a jam-packed show for you. You can reach us here in studio. You can send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Gentlemen, we played some clips off the top of the Jets road trip, a 4-game trip that I think ultimately can be described as a success with the 3-1 record. Their Jets, you know, battled back on Thursday night to tie that game in the third period. And you thought maybe they can go, you know, get a point in that after it was 3-3. Alas, it was not meant to be after Jamie Benn regained the lead for the Stars. But all in all, a pretty impressive 4-game road trip for the Jets, particularly I think the victory Tuesday night in Nashville against the division rival that's struggling right now, and the Saturday afternoon victory in Tampa Bay against a team that you think is a perennial Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that they couldn't get a point there, Drew, but you know, you mentioned the game against Tampa. That was the game that was the most impressive to me, and that was the game, of course, that was after we were on air last week, right? But I didn't think the game against Nashville was particularly impressive. You know, Connor Hellebuyck was impressive, but I didn't necessarily love the way the Jets played in that game. I mean, they did enough to win the game, but I think when you're talking about this road trip as a whole, guys, I mean, I was looking at this road trip and, you know, we didn't exactly give our predictions as far as the record, but I was thinking, you know, looking at the teams here, I was thinking, okay, if the Jets are able to win, you know, a couple of games, obviously they want to win all 4, Dave, but, you know, you look at the teams, you know, Nashville struggling, Tampa Bay struggling, obviously Florida and Dallas are doing really well, especially Dallas. I mean, they're right up there now in the Central Division, right? But I was looking at this road trip thinking, like, if you could get 3 out of 4 wins, that would be really impressive. Considering, you know, some of the guys that are out of the lineup, namely, you know, Brian Little and Mason Appleton right now. But, you know, you look at that from that perspective, they get 6 of 8 points. They almost get 7 of 8 points. And that's what really matters here. And I mean, it's Captain Obvious really saying that, right, Dave? But when you look at, you know, the Jets schedule, I mean, this is kind of the tougher part of the schedule in terms of the teams they play, right? It's going to get, you know, a little bit easier when you talk about, you know, December. They're going to get, you know, Detroit a couple times. They're going to get some non-playoff teams, right? But the schedule was tougher in October because they had so many games, right? And they had so few practice opportunities, right? So when you're talking about
so many injuries as well.
Well, injuries too. And even though Tampa Bay is a bit of a mess right now, it's still Tampa Bay. It's still a team that won the President's Trophy, right? And 128 points and all that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just really liked the way that the Jets won these games in the sense that they held on to leads. Mm-hmm. They were close games. Even though you'd like to see more offense, and I still think, you know, that second line is still a bit of a work in progress. I like Nikolai Ehlers. I like what Jack Roslovic is doing, but obviously, you know, Blake Wheeler, you know, he's not getting a lot of goals. He's getting some helpers, but the point is they get 6 of 8 points. Very impressive in the sense that they're still able to keep pace with the other top teams in the Central. I realize, you know, they're a few points back of St. Louis right now, but Hellebuck continues to play really well. And, you know, there was every reason to believe, you know, going into this road trip, you know, that the Jets might only win a couple of games or maybe only win one game when you're talking about going into places like Tampa Bay, Nashville. These are top teams last year. They're not top teams right now, but so, you know, I really impressive. Like the way they're playing. I think Blake Wheeler's doing a great job at second line center. I'd like to see some more shots because I think he's only, you know, averaging 1 or 2 shots a game, but we know that he's pass first. But you have to like getting 6 of 8 points anytime you go out on the road.
Well, Dave, let me ask you this. We're talking about the Jets road trip here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets record now, of course, for the month of November after what was a, you know, I would say, you know, a middling October, very much a 500 mm-hmm. hockey team in October. You know, the Jets record now for the month of November is 7-2-1. Has that changed your expectations? Has that changed your outlook for this team going forward? Or are they just right now sort of a team that's playing well that is eventually going to regress to the mean, especially if Connor Hellebuck maybe doesn't continue playing at the otherworldly pace that he's been at?
No, I mean, I think that the Jets are showing that they've been able to put together kind of a good role here. And as he illustrated why they went into some tough barns and had to come out with some victories. And to me, you know, you want to see more goal scoring from this Jets team. And that to me is probably the biggest area of concern. I mean, obviously they're giving up a lot of goals. Their goal differential right now is -6. They've given up 70 goals. They're one of the only teams in the Western Conference, at least, that's trying to fight for that's in the playoffs right now that has given up 70 or more goals. So that's a concerning aspect of the, you know, of the Jets record if mm-hmm. you're looking at it. But, you know, look, you're 13-9-1 overall for the season. I think that's a good place to be in light of all the injuries, in light of what's happened. So I think, to Ezzie's point, I think a lot of this is attributable to Connor Hellebuck, and I've been saying that for, you know, some time now, that he's been the MVP of it. I'm not the only one, but I think he's been the difference maker, and he has been playing otherworldly. Now, if he starts to regress back a little bit, yeah, you're right, then that's a problem. But it appears to me, and I could be wrong, that the Jets are slowly but surely starting to kind of form that identity. The biggest problem to me is the fourth line right now. That's not giving you the contribution you need from them at all. I mean, now is that a combination of Paul Maurice not trusting them enough to play them sufficiently? Perhaps. I mean, individually, you know, and then the issue also is, are there guys on the farm that you could give an opportunity if the guys, you know, that are currently there aren't getting it done? Now, the truth is you're winning. So do you really mess with that winning formula to try and inject a little more offense, or do you stick with it? I don't know. To me, you know, not using it, like having the Jets be a three line team may work in November. My concern for the Jets would be that if you're going to do that all season long, you're going to burn these guys out and they're going to be a little too tired, you know, come April. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously you want to win the game, so you want to keep on doing what you need to do. But at the same time, again, you don't want to, it's like what we talk about with Connor Hellebuck. You don't want to play him 70 games in a season. And similarly, I don't think you want Blake Wheeler up 25 minutes a game. I'm not saying he's playing that, but I'm saying, like, you don't want these guys playing those kind of minutes this much early in the season.
You don't want to burn them out in October and November because you're going to need them to be your horses in March and April.
Correct.
You know, so which Winnipeg Jets team is the real Winnipeg Jets team? The team in October that gave up 44 goals in 13 games played? Or the team that we've seen so far in November that has given up 25 goals in 10 games played? I mean, are they a team that is giving up 2.5 goals a game and that's, you know, what you expect going forward? Or are they a team that's giving up, you know, more than 3 goals a game, which is what they were in October? I mean, that's, you know, you sort of have 2 sample sizes, and they're decent sized sample sizes now. You got 13 games in October, you got 10 games in November. Which one is the real one? Which one can we expect for the remainder of this month, the next, you know, few games until December, and then in December and then January and going forward?
No, it's a really good question because, you know, we always talk about American Thanksgiving and it's later this year than it usually is. So
it's Thursday.
Right. So it's usually right now, right?
Yeah.
Or really close to now. So the Jets are in a wild card spot. They're obviously not, you know, in a commanding lead in a wild card spot, but they're there. So they're a playoff team. But, you know, I really don't know how to answer that question, Drew, because, you know, the Jets are still giving up a boatload of shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, Connor Hellebuyck continues to, like, he obviously didn't have his best game against Dallas. He wasn't the reason they lost that game, because we talked about it. I mean, the Jets could have, I mean, first off, we haven't even touched on the offside goal. I mean, does anybody think that that wasn't offside?
No.
I mean, Jason Dickinson was offside by the definition of offside. I know I don't want to get too into it, but when you talk about the Jets here, and where they're at after 23 games, and you talk about, you know, the defense and the goals against and all that. First off, on this power play, on this road trip, I think they only scored one power play goal, because against Florida they didn't have any opportunities.
Right, right.
They scored the one against Tampa Bay, so you don't really like that either. I agree with Dave.
But they're scoring 5-on-5, which is what they weren't necessarily doing a lot in the month of October.
Sure, but a team like the Jets, Drew, is powered by that power play.
Except for this,
I can't find a better word to say it, but yeah. I mean, last year that was a huge reason why they were, you know, competing for first in the Central.
And this year the power play certainly has not been a strength of the team.
No,
and it's
right.
a concern,
no.
even after this many right. games, after 22 games, no. it continues to be a concern.
But you're right. If you're a glass half full guy, I mean, you like that they're scoring at 5-on-5. I agree with you, but I think where I was going with this is that there's a lot of concern still, even though, you know, the Jets have won 7 games in November. I mean, I still think that you're concerned with the fact that the fourth line isn't playing a lot, isn't contributing a lot. And that has to do with the fact that a guy like Mason Appleton is out of the lineup. A guy like Gabriel Bork is out of the lineup. Also a guy like Brian Little, because, you know, that pushes guys up, right? That pushes a guy like Jack Roslovic up, which is good for Roslovic. Mm-hmm. He's playing well on that second line, but the reality is they just don't have the depth right now. I mean, Dave, you could call up a CJ Cease. You could call up a Jansen Harkins, and you know how well he's been playing.
Yep.
I mean, he's top 5, top 3 in the AHL in scoring, but the reality is, I mean, do the Jets want to do that? It's kind of like, you know, the Jets are they're playing the hand that's been dealt to them, and this is who they have, and you almost wonder, like, even if a guy like Jansen Harkins is in the lineup, does that necessarily does that move the needle on the fourth line? Like,
I don't think he's going to get any more of an opportunity. You know, if they were to call up some, if they were to change the look of the fourth line,
I don't think you want Harkins playing on the fourth line. I think you want Harkins playing on the top line of the Moose.
Yeah,
right.
Like, yeah, well, I mean, again, it's to Drew's point that I think he's about to make. It's more about usage, and I think,
yes,
I think
you.
To me, and it's people. It's funny because people ask me that all the time, and I say, look, if a guy's gonna, you know, if the Jets are gonna call Jansen Harkins up and sit him in the press box like Michael Spacek, or play him for 5 minutes,
yeah, it's pointless.
To me, it's like, well, wouldn't you rather see a guy developing with the Moose playing 20 minutes a game?
Yeah,
in all situations, power play, penalty kill. So. You know, it's a question of usage. And again, like I said, if we talked about it, if you think about it with Sean Tierney in the summer, the idea of balance and having lines that you can roll out and not be one heavy and then have the rest that are just not able to do anything. So to me, it's a function of, like, you know, if you're having that balance throughout the lines and your fourth line can actually contribute in a meaningful way, you know, I mean, again, I think they've been a little bit better of late, but I still think, like, you need some sort of offensive contribution from these guys.
Yeah, and to go back to Drew's original question, and it really is a good question. I hate to say it, you know, because I like to say that Drew has
no
terrible good. Questions, but
lousy host, really.
But really, we've seen two different teams. There's the team in October that gave up too many shots, too many goals, and then there's the team in November that has won these games 3-2, 4-3, and
2-1. They beat. And Nashville was 2-1,
right? 2-1, and you know, so. You're kind of asking yourself, I mean, is this sustainable? I don't think it's sustainable for the whole season. I definitely don't think that. But I think as the Jets get healthier, I think a guy like Sammy Niku really will help this team offensively. Because,
well, we'll talk about Sammy Niku and the free Sammy Niku movement later on in the show. Because right now, as we sit here on the 23rd of November, there's no indication that he's about to get the call up from the Moose. And that's, you know, certainly a topic of conversation throughout the show today. Sorry, as you go on.
No, it's fine. And the main point, you know, I realize we're up against the break here. The main point I was just going to make here to kind of conclude this segment is that this Jets team is I think, knows that to be successful, they have to win in a different way than they did last year.
Right?
Like,
100%.
Like last year, they could beat teams just based on skill and their power play. You know, it seemed at times that the Jets were scoring 2 or 3 goals a game on the power play. Mm-hmm. Like, I forget if they were 2nd or 3rd in the league. I don't remember what it was. But their power play was just, I mean, it was by far a top power play in the league. And this year, it's not. It's whatever it is, 20th or whatever in the league. And I think it will get better. I mean, Line A is going to start scoring goals on the power play. I mean, it's
I like
gonna,
his new way of scoring.
It's going to happen.
Chest.
But they have to get power play opportunities. I mean, the Jets aren't getting power play opportunities, right? We talked about the Florida game. It's rare that you see a game with no power play opportunities, right? So I think the goals are going to come The power play goals are going to come. I think that that these games on the road kind of provide a template for the Jets in how to be successful. Sometimes you're going to have to win a game by getting a greasy goal and just holding on to a lead in the third period.
Well, and I think the key, as that you hit on, is the fact that you've got to follow a new template. I mean, we talk about last year and their ability to score at will, seemingly in November, but the reality is what happened when the games got tighter? The Jets weren't able to maintain what they were doing in November.
Mm-hmm.
So to the point, and it's the point that the coaching staff is currently making, is that if you're playing these tight games in November, then you're going to be able to get, hopefully that's what their hope is, that to Ezzie's point, you're going to have a template that you can follow for the remainder of the season, and when the games get tighter, you're comfortable playing those games. So to me,
their record in one goal game so far this year,
well, is what, 10-1-1,
something like that. Yeah, so they're winning close games.
I think they've got the most wins in one goal games in the NHL. So
good teams win one goal games.
Right.
Also, good teams win games on the road, and right now the Jets are better on the road than they are at home. So,
right.
I mean, the sign of a good team is sometimes winning games that you shouldn't be winning, right?
Exactly. The Jets' winning percentage in one goal games is .833 through 23 games right now. So the margin of error isn't big, but they're on the right side of the ledger for the most part thus far through 23 games of the 2019-20 NHL season. When we come back, we're going to discuss the performance of Blake Wheeler as a center. It's been 7 games. Our thoughts on that Wheeler experiment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You know, initially when you make that switch, your focus is on, you know, the defensive end of the ice. You know, I'm moving to a new position playing with a couple young players. Obviously, it's a lot of responsibility for all of us. So, you know, you focus on that end. And I think we've been using our speed to come back defensively equally as much as we've been using it offensively. So I think it's really solid. And then, you know, especially the last 2 games, the offense is right there.
Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler talking about his experiment thus far as a centerman for the Jets. With Brian Little out of the lineup. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. The Illegal Curve question of the day: has the Jets' recent stretch of success changed your outlook for the team this season? We want to hear from you on that topic. You can send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. You can send us your texts at 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. Again, the IC question of the day: has the Jets' recent stretch of success changed your outlook for the team this season? This segment of the program brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Drew, I know you want to get into Blake Wheeler this segment, but
I do,
you know,
but I really want it to be interrupted more than anything.
Yeah, exactly. But when you talk about, you know, last segment and, you know, whether or not this road trip has changed our outlook, right? And obviously we want to get, you know, the fans' feedback on Twitter and the 1290 text line, but, you know, when people say, you know, the goaltender, if he regresses, if Hellebuck regresses, isn't that obvious? Like, for me, I'm kind of sick and tired of hearing that.
You don't want people to say that, to give that response.
No. I mean, it's true. I mean, Hellebuck is the quote-unquote equalizer because, you know, going back to last segment, I already know that, you know, some people out there listening are going to say that I'm being too positive, or maybe Dave's being too positive, but I mean, the Jets' underlying advanced stats are not good when you talk about, we talked to Sean Tierney about this 2 weeks ago. When you talk about shot share, expected goals, I mean, the Jets are not only a top 5 team, they're not even a top 15 team.
Their record is outplaying their analytics.
But if you have an amazing goaltender, and, you know, Dave has coined the Connor Vezina buck.
I don't know if I coined it.
I was going to say, yeah. There's certain things you might not want to take praise for.
And obviously there are other goalies having good years, like Darcy Kemper's having a great year. But I think Hellebuck, if I was voting, obviously they would never let me anywhere near a vote.
No.
I can't even vote in provincial elections. But when you talk about, you know, Hellebuck, I think right now, at the very least, he has to be a nominee, doesn't he?
Well, Josh, through 23 games, there's no question about it. I mean, he's been the reason why the Jets are above the playoff line. I mean, there's no question. And you don't need, you know, there's no expertise involved in saying that. The question is, will the team's game catch up to his performance. Sure. And, you know, when he goes through a blip, because inevitably he will the team be able to compensate for that by playing better, a better brand of hockey?
I think you saw a blip on Thursday. And even though there was a blip on Thursday, the Jets still tied up the game in the third period, right? Like, even though the Jets, I think, have had to change their style of play, and, you know, Murat Itesh has talked about this on The Athletic, Paul Maurice has admitted that because of the guys they lost specifically on the right side on the back end, Dave, they've had to change. You know, you talk about, you know, the back pressure and the forwards coming back and all of that. Strategically, they've had to change a few things, but when you've got Line A, Connor, Ehlers, Wheeler, Scheifele, all these skill guys, I mean, you're really never out of a game. So even though the Jets, I think, defensively, in their own end and on the back end, might be lacking some skill and all of that, they might be a little bit of a mess in their own zone at times, they still, I will take their top nine against most teams.
Let's get to Blake Wheeler. So Blake Wheeler's now been a centerman with the Winnipeg Jets for seven games since Brian Little got took the puck to the head. In those seven games, Wheeler does not yet have a goal, but he does have four assists in those seven games. I guess your initial thoughts on Wheeler as a centerman, Dave, and at this point in his career, when Brian Little's healthy, should Blake Wheeler be permanently, well, as permanently as anything is, be permanently considered a center for the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, I mean, again, I guess it's a function of depth, right? If you look at it and you think to yourself, do you like the way the, like, first of all, you have to figure out where are you going to put Brian Little? Are you going to have Brian Little as your winger? Are you going to have Brian Little as a fourth line center? Are you going to have, like, that's kind of a function of it, right? Because, you know, to me, you know, you like what Kopp, Lowry, Perreault, we know Perreault can be pretty much with anybody. He's going to have success. So, yeah. So you like that.
Kopp and Lowry too, for that matter.
Well, Kopp and Lowry obviously, yeah. You know, formed quite a, and Andrew Kopp, I mean, I thought on the Sabiza goal too, like that's just, that was vintage Andrew Kopp, you know, digging it out,
yep.
Recognizing that there was going to be someone. I mean, I think, you know, we presume he knew, had an idea. It wasn't just a blind pass. Could have been, but even if it was, it was still a pretty nice blind pass to Lucas Sabiza. But like, so to me, Kopp has been phenomenal, you know, with Lowry. And so you're not really wanting to do anything like that with anything.
Right.
With,
no, the question becomes, if you're absolutely right, when Brian Little's healthy,
if for the record, that's a big when. We still haven't heard, we have no indication as to when that is.
Exactly, Dave. And it's an interesting question that Drew brings up, because you're basically asking, if Little is out for an extended period of time, does Wheeler stay at center? And going forward, like next year?
No,
like,
I'm asking.
You're talking about like, and you know, Blake Wheeler's 33 years old, so it's not exactly like he's at the beginning of his career. He's been a right winger the majority of his career. And not only is he a right winger, he's a, I would say probably a top 10, maybe top 15 in the league. So you rarely
last year, no question, he was that dominant of a right winger.
Right.
But this year, so far, when he's been playing on the wing, you know, we know the struggles that he's had thus far this season. So it's a question of, would those struggles continue? Was it just a temporary doldrums that he was in?
Right.
Does he have a better game right now as a centerman? Right. I've heard a lot of people say, you've heard a lot of analysis, you know, since he's been a centerman this season, that they like his game because he's moving better. He seems to be moving freer.
Touching the puck more.
He's skating, you know, there's less of the starting and stopping and the standing still. And when you're a guy of Wheeler's size and getting up there in age, certainly, maybe it's, if you're an 18 Wheeler, it's always better to be in constant motion than it is to be starting from a red light and trying to rev up to top speed.
Right. And Ray Ferraro talked about this, guys, yesterday on the afternoon ride, you know, how it's very rare that a guy moves from wing, whether it's left wing or right wing, doesn't matter, and it's seamless, right? Like Blake Wheeler, you basically, like, it's as if he's a winger. He's obviously taking faceoffs and he's playing up the middle and there's more of a defensive responsibility, but the point is, he did this 2 years ago when Scheifele went down, right? He's such a smart, talented player that he moves right in. He moves right into that second line center role. So I think to answer your question, here's what I don't like about Wheeler playing center. Because he's a pass first guy, I realize that you're able to, you know, dish the puck off to guys like Ehlers, or whether you're playing with Line A doesn't matter. But I don't like the fact that, you know, Wheeler, we know, isn't a goal scorer, even though he's had, what, five consecutive 20-goal years. You look at his shots, and I was looking at his shots. I'm always interested in the shots, obviously. Not shots in the bar, but shots on net. That's right. I had that coming. But, you know, you look at his shots. Wheeler's a guy that usually averages, you know, three or four shots a game. And, you know, he's had a couple of games recently where he's had no shots. I think he didn't have any shots against Dallas, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, that's one thing that I don't like, is that he's obviously, just by nature, he's going to be a guy that's distributing the puck, right? So that's something that I don't necessarily love, that that his goal totals will be affected. He's already having trouble this year scoring goals, right? So that's not something I love. But as far as his vision and his creativity, I think he is a guy that up the middle can create a lot of time and space and get those talented wingers the puck. Right now it happens to be Ehlers or Roslovic, but, you know, could end up eventually being Line A on his wing as well, right? So I absolutely think Wheeler can be a center for the remainder of the season. Going forward though, Drew, I don't know the answer to that, because he's been a winger for so many years. Like, you're talking about how many years of his NHL career here? 12 years, 13 years, whatever it is. And going back to college and all of that before that.
So well, he played some really center at Minnesota.
Right. Some.
Yeah.
But he that was a few years ago.
It was a few years ago. Right. But I mean, it's
but
not
in the NHL, at the NHL level, he's been a winger for the majority.
He's been
right?
a winger.
So
yes.
I think he can do it. It's not a question of, you know, if he's capable or not. It's, does Paul Maurice think he's, or whoever is coaching the Jets down the road, do they think that, you know, Scheifele, Wheeler up the middle is their best option as opposed to having Wheeler on the wing? So it's really something interesting to watch, because nobody is really talking about it. Could this be permanent? Because everyone just expects as soon as Little comes back, you know, Wheeler's going to move back to the wing. But the reality is, guys, Little's out indefinitely. Obviously, we hope that he comes back sooner rather than later, but it's a huge question mark.
Dave?
Well, I think the other thing you have to factor in, though, is right now, Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp, again, defensively are very good, but offensively, are they putting the puck into the net? You know, Adam Lowry in 21 games has 2 goals.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of them into an empty net.
Right. Andrew Kopp has 3 goals mm-hmm. in 23 games. I'm just saying that to me, you know, look, can you keep Blake Wheeler as your second line center? Put Brian Little as your third line center. Ideally have Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp in a fourth line configuration of some sort.
Where a fourth line that would be playing, you know,
yeah,
more minutes.
But again, that's been my whole point the whole time, right? Is that, yeah. that don't have one line. And again, Sean looked at it in the summer with us. We talked about this idea of balancing out your lines and having ways of attack that you can use. So if you have an effective third line and an effective fourth line, oh, wow, that's shocking. What you're actually going to use them. And we know that Coach Maurice would end up using Lowry and Kopp quite a bit. So to me, in an ideal depth, you know, if you're talking about depth, mm-hmm. Lowry and Kopp are your fourth line shutdown group. And, you know, again, if you have Scheifele, Wheeler, Little up the middle, it's pretty good.
With Lowry as your, yeah.
With, and, well, sorry, yeah. and Lowry is your fourth.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That to me is a lot of depth, because we talked about the idea of, Paul Maurice has said, I shouldn't say we, but Paul mm-hmm. Maurice has said, when Brian Little comes back, and this was the previous time, this was after he suffered the concussion again in the preseason against Minnesota, when he was asked about Brian Little coming back into the lineup, he said, would you start him on the wing or would you put him in center? And his point was, he wanted Brian Little to go back into an area where he was most comfortable.
Familiarity.
Because he knows the routes. He knows that's what he knows to do. He's been a center his entire career. So for Brian Little to go in and play on the wing might be a little tough. I would think, and again, the big question mark, and we haven't talked about it, is time. When is Brian Little going to come back? We don't know that. But if you do, then maybe Brian Little comes back as your third line center. Lowry is your fourth. Your wingers are whomever, but to me, that really creates depth throughout the Jets lineup as opposed to really overloading the first couple of lines.
For the record, in the 7 games since Blake Wheeler's been a centerman, playing alongside Nikolai Ehlers and Jack Roslovic, at 5-on-5, 58.24% Corsi 4 percentage.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but then it's really interesting. If you take Wheeler out of that equation mm-hmm. and just look at Roslovic and Ehlers, 66.31%.
Well, I mean, again, that's not a shock, though, based on who those two players are.
Right.
Although somehow Ehlers is only a B in the rankings.
Yeah, I know. That's the about the top four.
Yeah, that was wild.
I know. It's okay. It's okay. We watch the team closer than other people do sometimes. Or all the time, I guess. When we come back, Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun is going to join us. We'll talk about the Jets road trip. We'll look ahead to tonight's contest against the Columbus Blue Jackets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one, Saturday morning, the 23rd of November. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Sun, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Scott Billick. He joins us from the arena, Bell MTS Place, where the Jets and the Blue Jackets will do battle.
Scotty, we've missed you. You were gone for so long.
I felt like I was gone for a year, man.
Where have you been? You never write.
I know. I don't write. I'll type. I should send you an email next time, or maybe a text.
Does anybody write? Like, does anybody send postcards anymore?
I doubt it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not
I don't even know if they sell those anymore.
Well, I mean, Ezzy's clearly not getting any, but that's okay. I know, Scott, we won't talk about the fact that you sent me one from the road trip. Scotty, welcome. Thank you for joining us this morning. Four-game trip for the Jets, you know, through Florida and then the southeastern United States, Nashville, Dallas. You know, I guess your overarching thoughts about the Jets' performance on a road trip that saw them go 3-1.
Yeah, I mean, I would say successful for sure. I mean, you know, if you would have thought, I thought going this trip, if they could have won two, you know, split the games, you know, that would be a success, given the fact that, you know, Florida's been a much better team this year. Tampa was will eventually find their stride, and, you know, the Jets have been kind of a pedestal for some teams to do that. And then a big Central Division game against Nashville, and then you're going to play one of the hottest teams in the NHL, so... You know, if you were maybe, you know, you throw away maybe that Tampa game and the other one, or the Dallas game, then maybe you win two of them. And, you know, they end up winning three. And I thought, you know, the Dallas game, it's the end of a long trip. And, you know, they did try to come back in the end there, but kind of got down after that, a bit of a, you know, debacle there in the second period. So, but, you know, I thought, and I was listening to the show earlier, and I'll just agree with Ezzy here. I mean, I thought, they didn't play as well as they maybe wanted to in Tampa, but played exceptionally well in that third period. I mean, they did maybe get caved in a little bit on shots. I think it was 16-10 in Nashville there. But, you know, I don't think you would find one shot in that third period for Nashville that was a high danger chance or something like that. They really shut it down in front of the net in that game. And I think that was a big reason why they were able to hold on to that 2-1 lead. I think, you know, in both the Florida and the Tampa game, they needed that extra goal because they gave up one late. So I thought they did really well in Nashville. I think that might have been, and that could have been a trap game too, right? You know, you go into Nashville, they had three nights in Nashville. I'll tell you what, that city's unbelievable. So I can totally see how, you know, you can be very, very tired after a night out there. And so, yeah, I mean, three nights in Nashville and coming off a pretty big win against, a pretty big win against Tampa, there could have been a bit of a letdown, and I don't think they did. They're right out of the gate, Patrick Laine scores, and then you know, obviously the Nikolaj Ehlers goal that ends up being the winner, and then they shut it down in the third. I thought that was their best game of the road trip, in my opinion.
Scott, before I get to my question, I agree with you completely. We were there in October for Richie's bachelor party, and let me tell you, I had a few Crantinis on Broadway, enjoyed myself. So just a few minutes ago, you mentioned that Mason Appleton was out there skating on his own before the rest of the Jets were on the ice. And obviously, the fourth line hasn't been playing much, didn't play much on the road trip. I mean, how important is it going to be to get Mason Appleton back in the lineup so Paul Maurice can start playing that fourth line more?
Yeah, I think, it's going to be a big importance, especially if you maybe, I don't think they put Mason right back onto the third line immediately. I think, they've liked what they've had with Matthew Perreault there, but it does give you maybe some flexibility at that point. And you're going to want, probably Gabriel Bourque back too, because I think, Gabriel Bourque's numbers aren't going to shine to you, but he's still a better player than some of the AHL guys that they've had up here, and you can just see it by the minutes that those guys are playing. It's not a lot. I thought in that Nashville game, actually, they played them quite a bit in that game. It was a bit of an interesting game there where they were getting a lot of ice time, especially in that third period. But, it's not working. I mean, and what do you really expect? You have a 19-year-old rookie at center, and you have two guys that, have played in the AHL. And so, it's tough to... It's tough to play that. I mean, you have some injuries right now that are hampering that. The Mason Appleton one's probably the biggest. I mean, imagine, obviously missing the Heritage Classic would have been, tough for him on its own. And then just the opportunity that he would have had right now to play and all the minutes he'd be getting right now is that's got a sting for him too. But I don't know. This is, I think today is exactly week number four for his kind of timeline of returning, or at least the window starting to open up for him returning. Obviously, him skating this morning is a good sign. It's still going to be about a while. We'll see, the Jets have a couple more practices here before they head on the road. And maybe Mason comes out on the road and then sees what happens there. But yeah, it is a good sign. And they need it. They need him to be back. They need to just start getting, you can't be somebody said it earlier, maybe it was Dave or somebody, but you can't be a three-line team forever. You're going to kind of maybe have a repeat of last season where guys are just tired down the stretch and it's not going to work. You got to have, four lines rolling where they can take maybe some of the pressure off, especially early in the games or even late when you need it. Just a good hard checking chip from a fourth line, and the Jets just can't really depend on that right now.
Scott, you talked about guys returning and Mason Appleton specifically. Obviously, he's getting closer. One guy we really have no indication about is Brian Little. I know whether it's going to be short-term, long-term. There hasn't really been any sort of indication. Obviously, the Jets went out on the road. But when Little returns, we were talking about it the last segment, would you keep Wheeler in that second-line center position? Where would you put Little? How would you configure the Jets if you had Brian Little returning, and what would you do with Blake Wheeler?
I'd put Brian Little back to center and Wheeler back on the wing. The thing that I saw with Brian Little is he was very good. I mean, he had good impact on games this season when he was playing. Brian Little worked extremely hard over the summer, and you could see it when he came back. He was a lot more lean. He was quicker during training camp, I thought. Very unfortunate. The hit from Kunin, obviously, that shelves him for 9 games. And then obviously the puck to the head, which is, who knows, right? I mean, we don't know. It could be the eardrum has to heal, and then they got to figure out if there's anything else. Concussion, the vertigo's obviously got to stop at some point. You can't play with that. Like you said, no timeline. But, I think Wheeler's played well at center, but this team needs offense right now, and they're not going to get that from Blake Wheeler right now because he's playing a defensive game. And I looked at some of the underlying numbers. Aside from a couple games, he's been on the right side of the possession ledger. It's just there's not a lot of offense, being created there in terms from Wheeler. And I think, if you went back with Scheifele or whatever, however they did it, at least you're going to have, Wheeler probably starting to get some points again. And he's already had a tough start to the year points-wise anyways. I mean, he's nowhere close to the 91-point pace he's put up for the last 2 seasons. Prior to this one. I think you have to go back to Wheeler on the wing. That's his natural spot. That's where he's gotten, that's where why he's getting paid $8 million and all that stuff. I mean, it's because of that. It's not because he's a center. He's played well there, but you need more than him just playing a defensive game. I mean, the Jets obviously need a good 5-man defensive unit on the ice at 5-on-5 because that's just the way it is this season with them. But I think you want Wheeler back with Scheifele or, some variation of that where he's on the wing and he is starting to produce points again because they're just not getting enough point production at the moment.
Scott Billick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott joins us from Bell MTS, plays with the Jets and the Blue Jackets. We'll do battle later on tonight, a game, of course, you can hear live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Scotty, sort of a tale of 2 seasons for the Jets so far. The team in October, that was defensive atrocity, and the team in November, that has been much more defensively conscious, especially as it relates to goals against. Which of those two teams is the real Winnipeg Jets?
It's probably somewhere in the middle of that. They've ran pretty hot here in November, and a good portion of that is, they're pretty adept at playing one goal games and winning those games, and two, I think they've just started to find themselves a bit of an identity. I know that word is getting thrown around quite a bit here, but Paul Maurice called it scrappy. I just think they've learned with what they have. They've learned how a certain way of playing that kind of allows them to, kind of batten down the hatches a little bit at times. And even if they are getting outshot, keep those shots at the perimeter. But the other thing is, Connor Hellebuck's by far been the MVP of this team. And you wonder, when's the regression coming? This guy's sitting, I think, fourth or third or fourth in save percentage this year. His goal save above average is way, and you know, I think he still might be first. I haven't checked in a couple of days, but at one point, it was quite high. So you know, he's saving a lot more pucks than he probably should be, just given the quality of shots and just the sheer volume that's coming at him. So I mean, I think a large part of that, at least right now, with Little out and with Appleton out, and you know, with no Dustin Byfuglien, obviously, and you know, just this young defense that's still trying to find its way, I think. I think a lot of it hinges on the play of Connor Hellebuyck and both the goalies, really. I mean, they're going to have to, you know, lean on Laurent Brossoit coming up here on this road trip. I wouldn't be surprised if he plays tonight, although I don't have an indication of that just yet. But, you know, it's just, you know, he's playing so well that, you know, the Jets are allowed are able to stay in games. I mean, you know, you can go back to that Tampa game on the road with that one, you know, spectacular glove save, and he had a few in Dallas in early in the third period where it's just like game could have been out of reach way before they even had a chance to have a comeback, if not for, you know, just a couple of monster saves by him. And that's just the way he's kind of been. I don't think he made a lot of, you know, when I wouldn't show it comes spectacular saves against Nashville, but he made just some, you know, even big boring saves that you need him to make, and he didn't make any mistakes there either. So I think the biggest thing is that it really hinges on him. The rest of it's probably somewhere in the middle of that record, that kind of 500 record, or the one right now that's, you know, well over 500.
Scotty, last question for you here, because you obviously have to continue watching practice and then go into the Jets dressing room after, as you mentioned, it hasn't been confirmed yet who's going to play in net tonight for the Jets. But is the thinking that if Paul Maurice goes with Laurent Brossoit, because he hasn't played since the first game of that road trip, and you're going to use him in one of those back-to-back games? Because if you do use him in one of those back-to-back games, you got to assume that Hellebuyck is going to get the start against San Jose next week.
Yeah, I assume, you know, Hellebuyck will play Tuesday, and then, yeah, you figure out who he plays against, whether he plays Friday. I assume he would probably play Tuesday, Friday, and then Hellebuyck will get the Saturday game. But who knows? I mean, it just depends. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, Paul Maurice talked about on the road, talking about having, if they can find these 5-day stretches every couple of weeks where maybe, you know, Hellebuyck could sit and they give him a game and just gives them that rest. It's kind of a sweet spot, it seems, for Connor. And so, I mean, right now, if you give him the day off, tonight off, then he'll have 5 days to have some time off. So, I think, you know, you probably, it wouldn't be a bad game to start Laurent and then have Connor fresh for the start of the road trip. I mean, this team's been a very good road team this year. And at home they've been, you know, so. I think it's what that, you know, less than 500, just around 500 at home.
Scott
playing very well on the road. So yeah, I think Laurent tonight would be the right call. We'll see if it happens.
Scott Bill covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. Scotty, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Appreciate it, as always.
Take care, Scotty. When we come back, we're going to obviously talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about the decision to keep Sammy Niku in the AHL. Will the free Sammy Niku movement ever get traction at the NHL level? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
No, we had just so many right handed defensemen, so that's why I'm the left side now, and I really don't care which side I play. Both sides are fine, so it's fun to play on the left side sometimes.
Current Manitoba Moose defenseman Sammy Niku answering a question from the man across from me, Dave Minuk, talking about his move from the right side to
the
left
side.
That
voice sounded familiar.
No, that was the voice of Sammy Niku. You couldn't hear Dave's voice in the clip. Yeah. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sammy Niku continues to play very good hockey, Dave Minuk, for the Manitoba Moose.
Yep.
The Moose in action tonight and tomorrow.
No, this afternoon.
Pardon me, this afternoon and tomorrow in Toronto to face the Marlies.
The Sheldon Keefless Toronto Marlies.
Exactly. The Moose were in Belleville on Wednesday, and they defeated the Belleville Senators to continue their hot streak. What are they now?
Seven in a row now
since Coach Vincent.
9-1-0.
9-1-0 since he last appeared on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah.
There you go. So Sammy Niku is playing big minutes for the Manitoba Moose. He's playing very well for the Manitoba Moose.
He's back on the right side.
He's back on the right side for the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah. Well, he was last game.
I mean, would you say at this point in time that there's much to be gained for Sammy Niku to continue to be playing at the AHL level? I mean, we know there's a large portion of the audience who wants Sammy Niku at the NHL level and who think he can help the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. What is the benefit that Sammy Niku is receiving by still being at the AHL level at this stage in his career?
Well, I mean, look, I will always default to allowing a guy to play versus sitting.
Well, let's assume for the purpose of this conversation, mm-hmm. that if he was with the Jets, he'd be playing for the Jets and not in the press box.
Right.
So what benefit is Sammy Niku as a player? I mean, is he beyond the AHL level at this point? You watch him.
Yeah, I mean, look, can Sammy Niku do things that a lot of guys can't do? Yes, absolutely. Has he been given a fair shot in the NHL? I mean, he played 30 games last year. He scored one goal, had three assists. I think Sammy Niku is an excellent player. I mean, there's defensive aspects of his game. That's one thing people don't like to talk about, but there's defensive aspects of his game that still require some work. So offensively, is he better than most of the guys on the Jets? Probably. But defensively, he still has some work on his game to do. So, I mean, like, that's why I'm saying, so him playing in the AHL.
But let me ask you this.
Okay.
Given the way he plays, mm-hmm. is he ever going to be a stalwart NHL defenseman defensively? I mean, that's not why you have him as a player.
Sure.
That's not where his strengths necessarily are.
Right. And that's all I'm saying. I'm just wanting that to be clear, though, for people mm-hmm. who don't necessarily watch Sammy Niku play a lot.
But nobody's expecting him to come in and be Mark Edward Vlasic, shutdown
defenseman.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying. He's not a defensive defenseman.
Vlasic has actually struggled this year.
I know, but I'm talking about circa 4 years ago when he played for Team Canada.
No, I'm joking, obviously. Drew, what you're saying is Niku's style is not one of a defensive defenseman.
Yeah.
He's an offensive, mm-hmm. Puck rushing type of defenseman, but continue on, Dave.
No, and all I would say is, I just think, like, if he's working on anything down at the AHL level, it is just that, the idea that of his defense, overall defensive game. Because offensively, first of all, at the AHL level, I mean, we see what he does. I mean, when he gets that puck and he just gets those wheels going, there really is no stopping him. And his vision is phenomenal. And that's the one thing you're hoping for, right? You're hoping for a guy who's going to be creating those breakout passes for the forwards and really has that vision. So to me, can Sammy Niku play on this Jets team on the left side? Yeah, because I don't think Dmitry Kulikov, again, has been anything to write home about. I mean, I think he's been okay, but I mean, is Sammy Niku the equal? Maybe not, again, defensive. I'm saying from Paul Maurice's perspective. I mean, again, you have to factor in who's the coach.
Yeah, well,
and the
clearly.
Coach knows what Sammy Niku is. He gets reports from Pascal Vincent, and clearly he doesn't want to put him into that role. I mean, he was asked about Niku, and he went on to talk about Beteto and Dahlstrom. And how he wants, so essentially it's not a function of getting Sammy Niku into the lineup. He's got to jump those two guys in the queue. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not even going to entertain the conversation as to whether Sammy Niku is better than those two defensemen, because he is. It's not even a question, but it's a function of whether the coach believes that. I don't know that he does.
So let me ask you this. Short of an injury to one of the Jets, let's say puck moving defensemen, mm-hmm. Pionk or Morrissey, how does Sammy Niku crack this lineup when, theoretically, both Dahlstrom and Beteto might still be, quote-unquote, ahead of him on a depth chart?
Yeah, and, I mean, if Niku gets called up, there's a good chance one of those guys goes on waivers, right? I mean, the point is Dahlstrom and Beteto aren't guys. I'm not saying they're going to put them right on waivers. I'm just saying that I don't think anybody expects those guys to be more than a 7-8 defenseman. But
right.
Hold on. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with the Jets over the next, four or five games, six games. Because you've got Columbus tonight, and then you've got that California road trip, right?
Wednesday in San Jose, Friday in Anaheim, right. The afternoon game, right. Saturday in Los Angeles.
Right, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And then you've got, the home-and-home with Dallas, right? I think that's going to have an impact, Dave, on whether they call Niku up because, you look at the road trip, they win three of four games. Mm-hmm. You say, okay, well, they're winning without Niku, but that's not really the point. It's what Niku can bring to the Jets. And for me, that's making them a quicker team and that's giving them an option on the back end because it's something that we haven't talked about a lot. It hasn't been talked about on this show or I think in general. It's the Jets really do lack offense from the back end. I mean, Josh Morrissey obviously is putting up some good numbers. And, Neil Pionk, I think, has been very solid. He's been a good option on the power play. But the point is, when you lose guys like Trouba and Byfuglien and Myers, mm-hmm. and even Sherratt was a guy that, could pop in the odd goal. My point is that Niku makes them better offensively. Now,
right.
the Jets aren't having trouble scoring goals right now. I mean, they were averaging, 3.5 goals on that road trip. But the point is, Niku just makes their defense better. So
just guy who can skate the puck out of their own zone.
Right. So to answer your question, I don't think the Jets need to wait for an injury to call him up. I think they should be calling him up because he makes makes them better. Now,
right, but
I don't
seem to be. There doesn't seem to be any inclination for the Jets to be doing that.
Right, and I don't get it either. But I'll be really curious to see. I think, you know, if the Jets end up losing, you know, four of the next six, maybe that changes their mind and they say, okay, we need to get Nikku up here. But if they win, you know, four or five of their next six, maybe they say, you know, let's leave Nikku down in the AHL.
Here's my fear: if something were to happen to a guy like, if there's an injury to a Spezza or to a Beaulieu or to a Kulikov, I don't necessarily think that Paul Maurice is tapping Sammy Nikku next to be the defenseman.
Well, that would be ludicrous.
I think he's going Boteto or Dahlstrom. It just seems as though
that makes absolutely no sense.
I don't disagree, but it doesn't make any sense right now from my perspective that Spezza and Kulikov are playing ahead of Nikku, who at this point in time I think has maximized what he can learn at the AHL level.
Yeah, and I it's interesting, right? I think it's a function of just getting the player in, and you know, why was Sammy Nikku sent down? Sammy Nikku was sent down. The understanding was that it was a conditioning assignment, not literally, not in a literal sense.
Yeah.
But he was sent down because they wanted him to get.
Hadn't played a lot of hockey. That's car accident, injury, blah
no,
blah blah.
No, and that it was totally fine. I had zero problem with that because again, you can go out in the AHL, you can make mistakes, and it's not going to kill you. In the NHL, you're going to get torched. You're going to sit on the bench. So. But his conditioning is great. It's not a function. I mean, the guy was always in good shape, but he's ready to play at the NHL level. So to me, you got to give him that shot. Now, again, the problem is the Jets are winning. So are they going to mix with that winning formula? Hard to say. I doubt it. But if to Ezzie's point, they start to lose a couple games here and there, I think you're going to see Sammy Nikku up.
When we come back, Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio, 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Blue Jackets later tonight at Bell MTS Place. Of course, immediately following us, stay tuned for Grey Cup Saturday. Some more coverage ahead of tomorrow night's Bombers Tiger Cats Grey Cup live here on, of course, TSN Radio 1290.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased to welcome to the program from NHL.com, Mike Zeisberger joins us on the line. Mike, good morning and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning from Denver, boys. Welcome. Thanks for having me on. And to all my friends in Winnipeg, I hope you're having a great, great Cup weekend.
Oh, they are. Absolutely everybody here in the city is psyched up for what will be a great sports weekend. The Jets and the Blue Jackets tonight, and of course the Bombers and the Ticats, and will be an epic Grey Cup contest tomorrow evening. Mike, obviously brought you on to talk about the big news in the NHL this week, the big news in the city of Toronto, the firing of Mike Babcock as head coach and the hiring of Sheldon Keefe as his replacement. You know, as we sit here on the 23rd of November, was it an error by the organization in not doing this in the summer when the Leafs lost to the Bruins again in the playoffs?
Well, I think what you have here is two schools of thought. I mean, from the general manager's viewpoint, Kyle Dubas hired, back when he was general manager of the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, he hired Sheldon Keefe to be his coach there, and Sheldon had some really good success together. And then when Kyle was GM, assistant GM with the Leafs, obviously Sheldon Keefe was brought in there too. So there's a relationship there. Now you go to the Mike Babcock side of things. Brendan Shanahan, the team president, was the guy that brought in Mike Babcock. And then, you know, it's interesting because Lou Lamoriello, who came in as general manager, came in about a month or two after Mike. But those guys worked very well. So there's a school of thought that said maybe Mike knew, you know, a year ago this past summer after they lost to the Bruins the first time Lou Lamoriello leaves after Kyle Dubas is made general manager. Once Lou left, there's a segment of the population or a school of thought out there that maybe Mike knew that his days were numbered then. And then they go and, you know, lose to Boston again this past spring. So, yeah, you know what? I do think that probably Kyle Dubas would have liked to make a change then. And I think that the one thing that probably put the brakes on that was Brendan Shanahan, because he hired Mike Babcock. He played for Mike Babcock in Detroit. And there was probably, you know, some sentimentalism there. You know what? I should keep this guy. He's brought us from, you know, we were pretty last place in the NHL to three consecutive playoff series. But for me, guys, you know, one of the things is, you know, Mike Babcock didn't win a playoff series. I think that's as much on the players as it ever was on him. But, you know, in a lot of ways, they brought in two new assistant coaches. You know, there was a lot, let's just say that there was a lot of reason for Mike Babcock to fail this year. And you knew that if the first hiccup that came, this would happen. And it did. So I agree with you. In a lot of ways, maybe this should have happened, you know, over the summer.
Mike, when you look at this Maple Leafs roster, even though they're not in a playoff spot right now, there's obviously an abundance of speed and skill. And, you know, a lot of people were looking at certain players that were maybe struggling and saying that, you know, now that Sheldon Keefe is coming in, those players are going to start to flourish. One of them being Tyson Barrie. Tyson Barrie obviously picked up his first goal of the year in that win against the Coyotes. But when you look at the Leafs roster, are there certain players that you say that are going to really benefit under Sheldon Keefe? Or do you look at it as a whole and say, this team is just going to benefit from having a different voice and a bit of a culture change?
Well, first of all, I do think that it'll benefit as a team, but it's interesting because we talk about a different voice. But 14 of these players that are on the roster injured are the guys that are on there now, and 10 the other night have actually played for Sheldon Keefe with the Marlies. So it's funny. Maybe it's not that much of a different voice, but I do think as a team, yeah, the whole emphasis now is we want you guys to kind of play with a little more freedom. We want to emphasize your skill. And let's face it, that's what this team is all about. You know, there's a segment out there of critics that think that this team doesn't have enough sandpaper, which if you look at the roster, there's not much of that there. What it is raw skill. This is what Kyle Dubas, this is the way that he wants to play. This is the way he thinks he's going to win. I'm not sure if that's a recipe for success, but I'll give him credit. I mean, everybody's all in on this. So he's either going to go to glory or go up in flames sticking to this game plan. And so when you look at it, you know, you mentioned a guy like Tyson Barrie. You know, you saw the difference in him the other night. He gets his first goal. I mean, prior to that, there were actually people in Toronto thinking that the Leafs should trade this guy, which I thought was kind of silly because, you know what, he's not the best defensive player. But you guys in Winnipeg have seen him long enough being in the Western Conference. This guy has tremendous upside when it comes to offensive skill. You know, I just don't think he was being used properly. All of a sudden, you know, he was on the second power play. Now he's being moved to the first power play. And look at it. I mean, Colorado's eating half of his salary. So his salary, I think the Leafs are on the hook for maybe $2.7 million. Where in the trade market are you going to find a guy with upside like that that's only worth, you know, $2.5-$2.7 against your cap for a team that's pressed up against the cap? So of all the players on this team that I think are going to benefit, Tyson Barrie's number one. And I think Jason Spezza a little bit too, because he was being made a healthy scratch with by Mike Babcock. But Sheldon Keefe knows, you know, Jason Spezza's not the fastest guy anymore, and we get that. But he's still got good hands, and he's still pretty smart. And on the power play, he can still be an architect. So, you know, among a lot of players, I would say those two are the ones to keep your eyes on.
You know, Mike, we know that Sheldon Keefe has had a lot of success, and you've talked about how he knows a lot of these players. He's coached a lot of these players. Obviously, he won a championship with the Marlies. The Marlies are basically almost like a 32nd NHL team, the way they're run. So we know they have a budget like an NHL team. They're a well-run organization. But what kind of voice does Sheldon Keefe bring? I mean, especially for people who don't really pay attention to the AHL, what kind of voice is he going to bring into the NHL?
He's a really good communicator with young players. He's one of these guys that looks at a player and he says, what can we do to maximize your upside and minimize your downside? In other words, he's not going to try to put somebody into making them play a structure that they're not comfortable in. And I think those are two of his strengths. You know, he can be pretty strict, but he's stressing fun. And you know what? I mean, here's the danger sometimes, guys, is we saw that, you know, he comes in, the Leafs, you know, Tyson Barrie gets his first goal as a Leaf. Sheldon Keefe wins his first game as an NHL coach. They snap a 6-game winless streak. So all is great in the world. But we don't have, you know, that's one game. You know, we need more of a body of work to see what happens. What I will tell you is at practice yesterday, that was as much fun and as loose a Leaf team I've seen in like 2 or 3 years. Now, once again, that could be just because there's any kind of coaching change. We've seen that in the past. But the one thing that Sheldon Keefe has emphasized is that he wants his players to have fun. And, you know, through 2 days, it looks like they're having that. Let's see what happens when some adversity comes. But it is a little bit of different philosophy from Mike Babcock, who is a pretty intense, you know, individual, as we all know. But I just want to say one thing, too. I mean, it's easy to, you know, I've seen a lot of people dumping on Mike Babcock. Look, this guy didn't put together a resume like that without being a good coach. And I do think that he'll land on his feet somewhere.
Mike Zeisberger is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike is, of course, with NHL.com. And you mentioned, Mike, that in your last answer that you think Babcock will land on his feet somewhere, which leads to my question. You know, can his style, both on the ice and off the ice, and how he deals with players, you know, is that a style that can be successful in this day and age right now in 2019?
Do you know what? I think it can, but it just depends on what situation you're going to. If you're going to a place that is a contending team and that has a coach that's pretty loose and easygoing and that's not working too well, you know, we talk about changing voices. I think then Mike can come in and be the kind of yang to the other guy's yin, where it'll be successful. And it's fascinating to me. I mean, you look around the league, And not just in Toronto, but, you know, look at some of the playoff teams from a year ago, guys. And then we look at some of the teams that are not really meeting expectations this early in the season. Tampa Bay, Nashville, Vegas, Calgary for sure, San Jose. And you look at the coaches in those places. I know other people will mention New Jersey. But you know, they're not meeting expectations, but they weren't a playoff team last year. You know, I just think those other teams I mentioned are in a different shape. But we're talking about coaches like Peter DeBoer, Gerard Gallant, John Cooper, Peter Laviolette, Bill Peters. I'm not saying those guys' jobs are in jeopardy, but it just goes to show you, like, the difference in 1 year. For a bunch of really, really good coaches coaching playoff teams, how quickly things can turn. And sometimes, you know, it's going to be fascinating how this coaching carousel, you know, ends up. Because by the end of the season, by February or March, there could be some pretty big-name guys on the market.
Mike, last question for you here. You mentioned at the top of the interview you're in Denver right now. Obviously, the big game between the Leafs and Avalanche tonight. We know that it's Nazem Kadri's first game against his old team. What are you expecting tonight? Because obviously, the Avalanche had that really disheartening loss to the Wild in their last game. And we know that the Leafs want to follow up their first win under Sheldon Keefe. The Avalanche, even though they're without Rantanen and they're without Landeskog right now, they've won 5 of their last 7 games. What are you looking for heading into tonight's game?
I'm expecting a lot of goals, number one. I'm expecting a lot of speed, number two. But, you know, Tyson Barrie coming back, he's got so much confidence now. Just one goal. But not only just the one goal, you know, kind of having the shackles removed by Sheldon Keefe. I think that's going to be fun to see. And Kadri, you know, it's funny because you mentioned those two guys, okay? So Kadri went out with some of his Leaf teammates last night, and Barry went out with Nate MacKinnon and a bunch of the Avs last night. Neither one of these guys wanted to move, okay? They were happy with where they were in their old situation. So it's going to be funny to see, or maybe not so much funny as fascinating to see how those two guys fare against their old teams tonight. And specifically Kadri, because we all know the type of guy that he is. You can be best friends with this guy, but once the puck is dropped, all the Leafs are saying we expect them to be chirping us. We expect them to be in our face. So, you know, for me, the theme tonight is, you know, friends are going to become foes once the puck is dropped, and I think it's going to make for great theater here in the Mile High City.
Mike Zeisberger is in Denver. He's going to be there for the Leafs and the Avalanche later tonight. Mike, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, man. I think you guys do a great, great job, and I'm privileged to come on anytime you'll have me. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mike. I very much appreciate that. Mike Zeisberger joining us from Denver. When we come back, we discuss Dustin Byfuglien filing a grievance, or the NHLPA filing a grievance on Byfuglien's behalf. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Tough spot here for the Winnipeg Jets because the Jets aren't certain of the end game here. This is a battle between the NHL and the NHL Players Association. Now, initially, I'm told the Winnipeg Jets weren't happy when Insider Trading broke the news that Dustin Byfuglien was contemplating retirement. They knew that, of course, but they wanted to give their star defenseman time and space to really think through his future. But that was then, and this is now, and there is zero chance that anyone associated with the Winnipeg Jets expected it would go from that point to a point now where it's in grievance and awaiting arbitration.
TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger talking about the NHLPA decision to file a grievance against the Winnipeg Jets, against the NHL, regarding Dustin Byfuglien's injury. That, of course, will eventually go to an arbitration hearing sometime in the next, you know, few weeks.
Jets have 10 days to respond.
10 days to respond.
In writing.
And then, of course, a hearing will be set. And there's no urgency yet to get it done very quickly because he's still injured. But another twist, another tale in the Dustin Byfuglien saga as it relates to his injury and his retirement and his non-retirement and his non-injury. Who knows what's next in that saga?
Well, there's definitely an injury. We know that.
We
can substantiate that.
You don't think he just went for surgery for the hell of it? You think
no.
There was an injury involved?
Yeah.
Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. So the lawyers are now heavily involved, and as everyone knows, anytime lawyers are involved, that's a good thing between Dustin Byfuglien and the Winnipeg Jets.
I don't know if it's a good thing if you have to pay them.
My tongue was firmly in cheek when I said that lawyers being involved is a good thing. But, it's not a surprise that that this development occurred. It's just a surprise that this has gone this far, that this has been botched, mishandled, miscommunicated, whatever phrase you want to use, that it's now at this point between the Jets and Byfuglien and his organization and the NHLPA and the NHL, because I think they have a significant role in this as well.
Yeah, I don't know why you're looking at me. Dave's entire family are lawyers, so you should probably be asking Dave. But
this is an opportunity for you to tell us what you got on the LSAT again.
Yeah, 147, which is not good, because
I think
you get 145 for spelling your name right.
Yes.
And I didn't, so...
No.
We're obviously going to get some closure here, guys, eventually. I don't think it's going to happen, you know, as soon as we would like, because, you know, I said this last time we were talking about Buff, right? At this point, you know, I don't speak for you guys, but I think you guys agree with me. I think we just kind of want to know, you know, where this is heading. And obviously, you know, now that the NHLPA and NHL and their legal teams are involved, obviously, you know, this is not something that, you know, most fans can relate to. And what I mean by that is that I think Jets fans just want to know, is Buff coming back at all? Is he going to come back with the Jets? Or are the Jets possibly going to move him? But really, at this point, it looks like, unfortunately, it's more about, you know, money and, you know, how much Buff is going to get, what's going to happen with the last year of that contract. And, you know, Elliot Friedman talked about this, Dave, and you've been on top of it on illegalcurve.com, right?
You're a company man.
Well, this is all about, you know, the exit interviews and, you know, whether or not Buff was injured in the offseason, mm-hmm. whether he told the Jets about it. And I really don't know a lot about these, you know, legal matters when it comes to injuries, NHL. Maybe you can speak to it more, Dave, but, you know, it sounds like if Buff was injured during the offseason and he didn't tell the Jets about that, that's really going to determine whether or not the Jets were in the right to suspend him. But the thing that I really don't get about this whole grievance, and again, maybe, you know, Dave can shed some light on this. The Jets said that they suspended him as a formality because he was already on personal leave. So the Jets didn't suspend him because he didn't report the injury. They said at the time, if you go back, mm-hmm. they said that they were only suspending him as a formality because he was on personal leave.
I'm going to suggest that the Jets organization, in their public statements initially, were engaging in maybe some half-truths and were not as truthful as you would like them to be to their paying customer as it pertained to the status of Dustin Byfuglien. If they come out, you know, remember the, you know, Paul Maurice's line about this, there's nothing sinister about this. Well, clearly there was something, I mean, I'm not going to say sinister, but there was more than what they let on at the outset of this when training camp began.
I honestly think, okay, so first of all, just rewinding, the biggest bone of contention between the NHL and the NHLPA is the end of season
medical.
Right.
So, which ultimately a player has to sign off on. Mm-hmm. So what they're saying is you signed off on it. You said you were fine. The medical staff passed you. So it's a non-factor. And the Byfuglien team would basically say, well, you know, there was pre-existing conditions that was aggravated in the summer potentially, but that was something that was obviously, you know, a result of what he had suffered last year.
He was healthy. He was healthy at the end of April, but then he did something in June and it hurt him and it was right. exacerbated.
So really that to me is the crux of the issue. The one question I have really, which never seems to have been answered, is what did the Jets know when Byfuglien wasn't playing in the beauty league?
Right.
Because to me, look, he was on the roster. He was scheduled to play, didn't play.
And it's important to note that he has played in that league in previous years.
Correct. Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Since it started. Yep. Which I don't know when it started, 3 years ago, four years ago,
something
whatever.
Something like that. Yeah. So to me, the big question really is, did the Jets, when they saw that he wasn't participating, inquire? Did they get any sort of insight from him? Did they reach out to the player and say, hey, what's going on? How come you're not playing?
Did they call Ben Hankinson? Did they,
sure. you know, like, did they do the due diligence at that point? I don't know. We don't have an answer to that at this.
It's hard to believe that they did it.
See, Drew, that's that big law word, due diligence. That's why, you know, Dave is more eloquent than me and can answer this segment better.
But anyway, so that to me is the big question. Now, ultimately, I think really Byfuglien probably came and said, I'm wanting to retire and I'm done. I'm not feeling healthy. I honestly don't know that this is, I mean, obviously Dustin Byfuglien has to sign off, but I would think that this is ultimately being done because the NHL is trying to protect the integrity of a guy's contract. His agent probably is very happy with this because his agent, you know, wants this to finish those last two years. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons. Does Dustin Byfuglien, and we've talked about it so much. We talked about it last week. We talk about it whenever we talk about Dustin Byfuglien. He doesn't seem like a particularly guy you can pigeonhole and say, well, you know, this is normal. Like, who walks away from $14 million? Honestly, if anybody would walk away from $14 million, it's probably a guy like Dustin Byfuglien.
I think you make a good point there when you say that this is less about Dustin Byfuglien versus the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, no.
Then this is more about the NHLPA versus the NHL.
No, and that's absolutely my point. And that's why when people are like, oh, is this doing damage to the relationship? I mean, look, are the Jets happy that they had to answer the question about the surgery after the fact and not knowing and, you know, the way that kind of came out? That's obviously not ideal from an organizational perspective. You would like to think that the player is going to keep you in the loop and let you know that he's thinking about doing this and then try and do it through, you know, consultation. But again, end of the day, it really is a curious situation, but it's really not Jets versus Byfuglien at this point. It's NHL and NHLPA.
I would agree with that. When we come back, Aaron Portsline of the Athletic is going to join us to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets. Starting goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets tonight, Laurent Brossoit, who first off the ice at Jets practice.
And that's what Scotty Billick said in the first hour. Right. He had a good inkling that maybe the Jets were going to tap Brossoit.
So it does appear that it's going to be Brossoit in net for the Jets against the Blue Jackets, a game you can hear later tonight on TSN Radio 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.